Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. You guys have probably caught on by now that I'm a big believer in the power of coaching. My own life has been impacted by several influential coaches, and I'm in the process of becoming a coach myself. So it's no accident that several of the guests on this podcast have also been coaches or women interested in personal development. Today's guest, Shelly, has survived what many would consider a worst-case scenario. After losing her husband in a tragic way, Shelly rebuilt her life. She's gotten healthy in her mind and her body. She became a certified life and grief coach. And 6 months ago, she gave birth to her adorable son, Bentley, as a single mother by choice. It was an honor to speak with Shelly and to hear her beautiful story of strength. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to have you this evening. I'd love for you to start at the beginning and just tell us a little bit about you and your story and how it's relevant in this realm of single mothers by choice.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shelly Kinchu. So my story kind of starts in September 2017. My husband died. And after that, kind of that's when I got into coaching. But then as far as single mother by choice, I was 41 when he died. So we had been trying to get pregnant unsuccessfully prior to his death. We had done 5 rounds of just using IUI. Didn't work, but I still wanted to be a mom and I knew that I couldn't do it on my own, obviously. So I started looking into different options. And well, first I went and made sure that I could get pregnant. I went through all the tests and, you know, started seeing the fertility doctor and they're all like, you know, you want to do this on your own. We support you 100%. I was really lucky, I feel, because like the doctor I found was amazing. And with being older, you're like geriatric when you're over 35 and and then to like do the whole process. So he was amazing and just like, let's do it. So after I got everything approved for me, like that I was good to go, I did all the tests, everything came back fine. I had my fair share of eggs, even they were surprised at how old I was. And honestly, for me, like we had been trying for years. And so it's just, you know, and I'm an older person. So just like, I never even got pregnant ever, you know, like it was never even a scare my whole entire life. So it's kind of crazy. Like maybe something was wrong with me and that I wasn't able to get pregnant, but then they kept saying, everything looks good, you know, let's move forward. I started doing research on different sperm banks. I spent a lot of time researching them because I really wanted some place that I felt comfortable with. And I didn't want it to be so much of a number. And there's nothing wrong with them. I found the Sperm Bank of California and they only allow 10 families per donor. You know, they're the only nonprofit sperm bank in the United States. So you can't have like hundreds of siblings out there. And that was just something that was important to me. I also wanted to have an open donor so that when my son is 18, he has the option to know that side of his family if he chooses and who the donor is. So that was important. I narrowed it down to my favorites and printed out sheets. There were 5. And I had all my friends spent days going through everything and picking all the best ones and why, and we named them and just did this whole big thing. And the day I called to order, none of them were available.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, and everything's timing, right? Like I had it in my brain that I wanted to do this in April of last year. And so I was calling in March because I also wanted to make sure everything, I was like, I'll pay for storage. I just want them here and close to me. None of them were available. And because it being so small, once everything's out, they put everything on hold until they find out if things are successful. And so basically I had to go through and I was set on doing it. So I hung up the phone with her, looked through the catalog and was like, okay, you know, like I checked off the points that were most important to me with the donor and just said, all right, let's do it. Let's pick this one. And so I only bought one vial to start with. I was like, I'll just do one and we'll see how it goes and go from there. Actually in March, sorry to just back up a little bit. I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I had wanted to do April. Like that was in my head. And then at one point I was like, well, why wait any longer? Like, let's just do it in March. And then in March, my doctor was gone. And so I missed the window and I had this other doctor. And so it was weird because then it was like, okay, it had to be April anyways. And also another weird thing, like I had been regular my entire lifetime and in April, I wasn't. So nothing was as it should be. Like, I don't know, I got my period like a week earlier than normal. And so everything was off track and out of whack. And I was always regular except for that month. But I went in and he did the procedure and it worked right away. My first IUI was a success.
That's amazing.
So, it is. So amazing. And it was on Easter of last year. That's just kind of a cool thing to remember. A friend had came for the weekend and I had to give myself the trigger shot on the Friday before and I couldn't do it because it's pretty scary to stick that needle in your leg. And I was like, I can't. And she's like, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And she didn't even know that I was doing this when she came over for the weekend. And I'm like, okay, so by the way, I have to give myself the shot and you're going to help me and do it. And she's like, well, I can do it. And I'm like, no, I have to do it. I have to do it.
Oh, those trigger shots. They're bad.
I know. Yeah. And they're not even right. Like right. You don't even feel it. But at the time it's like, I can't stick that whole thing in my leg.
Yeah.
But.
Well, okay. So I have a couple different questions. One is, I think that many of us who go through the process of choosing a sperm donor, there's a grieving process for everyone of letting go of starting a family in the way that you maybe always imagined it. And for me, the process of choosing a donor, I was kind of like comparing the donor to like this hypothetical person that didn't really exist because I had never had that partner that I thought I was going to start a family with. But for you, you had that partner. And I'm just curious about that process of choosing a donor. Like, what was that like? Did it feel relevant at all to like, were you comparing your husband to the donors or was it just two completely separate things?
I think it was kind of both. I think there were some things about my husband, like I wanted him to be tall, the donor to be tall. My husband was really tall. And I also just kind of wanted a fresh start. I was really more concerned with medical stuff than I was on appearance or anything like that. And just mm-hmm. medical history of family members, other than the height thing. Those are really what I really focused on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess, you know, you picture that this is what it's going to look like and it just doesn't. But it was kind of a fresh start for me to just do something on my own and start over.
Mm-hmm. So you said you kind of had to make a last minute decision about the donors. How many did they give you options for in that kind of last minute crunch time? Do you remember how many you got to choose from?
Well, I don't remember how many were available in the catalog, but I had, when you do them, you can buy different, like the more extended profiles and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had two more than the five that I had already bought the profiles of. So there was just the two that I was like, okay, well then let's just decide between these two. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a ton. And like, that's one thing with that sperm bank too, they have less options.
I feel like that's kind of a double hit. You're not starting your family in the way that you always imagined it. And now you're not even getting the donor that you had picked or even the second or third donor that you picked.
Right. I know.
I'm sure that was really hard at the time. How much do you think about it now? Like, does the donor even come into your mind at all now that you have your son or?
Not at all. I mean, I'm just, I guess, so grateful for the donor that I have because I think my son is amazing and exactly how he's meant to be. And so all that stuff, like I'm just, every time I look at him, like I'm just a firm believer that everything happens for you and I wouldn't have him if I had a different donor. And it's just, I don't know, it's crazy how life happens the way it does. So honestly, like, to me, it's more of a funny story of how I spent all these hours and had all these opinions on these people that were the potential donor. And then in the end, it was like, you can spend all the time wanting things to be perfect, and really
right.
Perfect doesn't have to be so complicated.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about your pregnancy? Like, how was pregnancy for you?
I think it's a blessing to be an older woman pregnant, because you are treated like you're high risk, even if you're not. So you get all the extra appointments. So to me, it was kind of fun, but I was super healthy during my whole pregnancy. Like, I felt really good. I worked out the entire pregnancy. The beginning was the normal, don't feel so good, but I don't know. I loved being pregnant, to be honest. And then I got to go in for extra ultrasounds because I was considered high risk and geriatric. At the end, they would do the heartbeat scans when you get to listen to the heartbeat. I got to do that every week at the end.
Wow.
And it was like 20 minutes to just go sit in a recliner and listen to my baby's heartbeat. It was amazing.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that they had that. I hope my doctor has that.
Yeah, it was really great.
Mm-hmm. And what does your support network look like during pregnancy? And then now, did you have people going with you to appointments? Did you go on your own?
One of my sisters came with me for my big ultrasound, like the first scan where they measure everything. But other than that, I did every appointment by myself. I honestly didn't think about it as bad, I guess. Like, I didn't think I was missing someone being there on my own. I don't know. I think I was in a really good place as far as this is just me. It was interesting how they would always say, is somebody else coming with you, or is your husband going to be here for the scan? Or, you know, I think sometimes people assume, even just kind of a sidebar to that, like when I toured the hospitals, the tour guide I toured two hospitals, and at the one she was like, you know, is your husband coming? And I said no. You know, and then the whole time, the whole tour was based around where your husband goes and what your husband does, and your husband will be in this room. And so it was really just interesting to me that it would never be even an option to not have a husband. But then the other hospital, it was just like, who's going to be with you? And then the whole tour was done based on each unique couple in this different situations. So
did that influence which hospital you chose?
It did, just because I felt more open, and just, it was more comfortable to be able to say, I don't have a husband that's going to go with the baby in this room, or, you know.
Right. Yeah. I've encountered that even just at the fertility clinic. And sometimes I feel like I enjoy getting to remind people that families look all different ways and you can't just assume, you know? And so I'll be just like mm-hmm. super confident, but like making very clear that nope, I don't have a husband. And then other times right. It just, I guess, just that tiniest little thing. I know they don't mean any harm by it, but it just kind of breaks my heart a little bit. And I'm like, oh.
Yes, yes. Yeah. My sisters have been like huge support this whole time. Actually, my whole family is my dad, everyone, all my friends, like they've just super supported this since I started talking about it. And everybody's been like, don't wait, do it. I think it's amazing.
Does your family live close to you?
I mean, everyone's in Wisconsin. So my dad and one of my sisters are an hour and a half away. And I have another sister that's 20 minutes away. So everyone's within driving distance.
And you have a boy, right?
I do, yes.
And how old is he now?
He will be 6 months, July 10th.
Wow.
I know.
Gosh, it's so crazy that it was just last spring. We're in this weird time warp where I'm like, wait, is it still spring? What month is it? You know,
right?
But like, I think your IUI just happened. Like, how do you already have a 6 month old?
Right.
Well, so usually I like to talk with women about what started the biological clock ticking, or like, when did you start kind of feeling worried about fertility and thinking about taking a route different than the typical love, marriage, baby, carriage. But for you, I mean, your story is a little bit different because, you know, you had been trying and then life took you in a different direction. What was your process after losing your husband? Do you want to talk a little bit about deciding to do this? Like, was it an immediate thing that you knew you were going to do? Did you have to really like take time to think it over? What was that like for you?
It wasn't immediate after any sort of death. losing your husband, you're just like, okay, my life is completely, completely crazy and different than anything you can expect. So once I started like taking care of myself again, I was like, okay, you know, what do I want? And I think when death happens and someone that is close, I think you open your eyes to, you can't wait for things anymore. And life is short. His death was unexpected. It was an accidental overdose. He went to bed one night and didn't wake up the next morning. So it was like, okay, everything can end in 1 second. So it just switches your perspective. So I knew, well, I had to lose some weight. I had just wanted to. So I was like, okay, I'm going to lose weight. And then I'm going to start working on this process. And I kind of set a goal. I started in January of 2018. I was like, okay, I'm going to set this goal. This is what I want to do. And so all of 17, I really worked hard. I lost like 50 pounds. I was working out, eating healthy. I knew I wanted to be as healthy and I could. So it was kind of like always my goal, but I knew I had to put things in place before it could happen. Then in November of that year, November is when I started doing all my doctor's appointments and going through everything. And from when we went to the same fertility clinic that my husband and I had gone to, but it had been like a couple years by the time we went back, or by the time I went back, and like they had said that some of their regulations had changed. And so if I wouldn't have lost weight, I wouldn't have even been eligible to use them. So they're like, you're healthier now than you were when you were younger, you know, which is not always the case. I don't know. I've always wanted to be a mom. I don't know. I love my nephews to death, but I just knew that I wanted to be a mom. And I just figured, like, let's just figure out how this is going to happen. And I guess meeting someone when you're 41 and saying, hey, it's nice to meet you. By the way, I want to have a baby. So are you open to that? Like, that's not a thing, right? Like right. You can't say that. And so I didn't want to even try to say that. So I was like, okay, if I want to have a baby, this is what I have to do. And I'm willing to do it. And let's just make it happen. I think my support system had a huge thing to do with it. Every single person was on board with it. There was no one in my life that was like, are you sure that you want to do that? You know, are you sure you want to use a donor? Like most people they weren't familiar with it. Like it was a new process for everyone, but nobody was like, you know, are you really sure you want to use a donor? That wasn't even a thing. So
yeah, that's great. So I'm curious about knowing that this was something that you wanted, but also you wanted to take that year and get healthier, you know, prepare yourself. Did you ever consider egg freezing, or were you just hoping and planning that IUI would work for you?
I was just hoping that IUI would work for me. I guess I didn't think that it wouldn't. It didn't even cross my mind. And I don't know if maybe I wasn't, like, a huge part of like my fitness and losing weight was part of my grieving, how I healed myself. Mm-hmm. And so the end goal was there, but I guess I didn't think about it, honestly. I was like, it's just going to work.
Yeah. I'm so happy for you. And I do think sometimes there's kind of an intuition that's different than just sort of blind optimism, you know? I mean, I think that sometimes we just have these deep knowings that don't necessarily make sense. But it is really interesting to hear different women's stories and women who are, you know, in their early 30s and have so much trouble getting pregnant, and then women who are in their 40s and it just happens pretty easily. And your story is so interesting because you had been trying to get pregnant without success, and then to have one IUI, I mean, the odds of an IUI working over 40, I think it's definitely less than 10%. So
yeah,
that's amazing. And then to have the egg quality, to have that be a successful pregnancy. I mean, that's, you got some stellar eggs.
Yes. I know.
Have you considered having an egg retrieval or anything like that post baby, like in case you wanted a second, or do you think you're one and done?
Oh, I go back and forth. I think that having another baby, for Bentley to have a sibling, would be amazing. And because my donor's in that, he's hit the 10, so now he's only available for siblings. It just kind of is like, how that would be really cool, I think, to have a full sibling for Bentley. But I haven't even looked into anything yet. because I'm just kind of enjoying right now. And
for sure. Yeah. And there's always a chance that your egg quality will still be such that you could just do another IUI and have it work, or do, you know, two or three IUIs and have it work. It's really interesting to me. I've learned a lot about how really egg quantity and egg quality, they're not really correlated. I mean, I guess the only thing they have in common is they both decrease as we get older. Mm-hmm. But there are women who have, they'll do a retrieval and they're, you know, our ages, like, you know, late 30s, early 40s, they'll do a retrieval and get like 30 eggs. But then they go to fertilize them and like three fertilize or something like that, you know, versus like for me, right. Every time I've done three retrievals, but every time I do a retrieval, I get like 7 eggs. And the doctor sort of asked like, that was a huge failure, but then we fertilize and 2 out of 7 or 3 out of 7 will make it, you know? And so it's, the quality is high, but the quantity is low. So you just never know. But I mean, I guess as long as you got good ones in there, you could always, yeah. always hit the jackpot.
I know. And I did through it. I have a cyst on my right ovary. So like they would never, like the follicles on that side, they wouldn't even use. They weren't able to get big enough because of the cyst. So that we kind of learned. And it's just so interesting how there's so much going on in your body. I mean, you don't know until you just can look at it every single week and see how things are progressing and growing. And it's crazy.
Right. I know. I, so many times in this process, I've just thought it is insane to me that people accidentally get pregnant. Like it just feels like so much has to be going right. I don't know how anyone does it without the assistance of a doctor. It just seems insane. So one of the things that I like to ask people is that if there's anything that you wish you would have known earlier, or things that you would tell your younger self, could be with fertility, motherhood, anything that comes to mind.
I guess I would just say to not give up. Like it can be hard and it's, you know, it's heartbreaking when you're trying and every month you know, like the day you get your period is like the worst day ever. And you just, it breaks your heart over and over and over. And I guess to just keep going, and things are going to happen the way they're supposed to happen. And, you know, if you really want it, don't give up. And there's alternate ways to do it. It's okay to try other options to make it happen. If you want to be a mom or you want to be a parent, then it's worth it to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. One of the things I've learned in this process that has been most surprising is there are so many things that used to be my worst case scenario that now I know I can handle that, you know? And I think that you probably have experienced that as well with, you know, losing a loved one and shit that we go through in life that we think we couldn't bear. And then we get there. And I was very, very lucky, very blessed with the outcome of my egg retrievals and embryo success in terms of like PGS testing and all of that. But I had a moment in that process after the eggs had been fertilized and before I knew whether any of them were going to be viable, where I realized I would be okay if none of them make it. Of course, I don't want that to happen, but like, I would be okay. And it was sort of this out of body, like weird, shocking experience where I realized like, I've actually done the work to get to a place in my life where like the worst case scenario is something that I can handle. And like, once you hit that, you're like, oh, this could apply to anything and everything. I know that I can get through whatever it is. And it's so interesting to look back at how some of the things that I thought were the worst case scenarios, like not meeting a guy and getting to an age where I realized, oh, I'm going to have to do this on my own. Like that was my biggest fear for a decade, you know?
Right.
And now I'm like, well, it actually has some really great perks and I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Yeah. And just, you get to be the only decision maker for everything. Yeah. So because then you can just like bounce ideas off of people. But in the end, you get to make all the choices.
Will you talk about that a little bit? Like the experience of being a single mom and like, what are the pros and then what are the hard things and maybe like what surprises you?
Sure. Well, I would say the craziest thing is having a baby during a global pandemic. My hugest struggle was going back to work. I had 7 weeks of maternity leave. So like he was just so tiny of a baby. And I had found an in-home daycare, but he was so little at 7 weeks. And so I went back to work 2 weeks before my position was furloughed. So I've been off since, March 26th? So I got like this huge extended maternity leave, which has been amazing. Spending as much time that you can is so great. You know, and I'm obviously, if this didn't happen, I would be working, and it is what it is. But like my stress at that time was, I'm going to get home from work and then have no time with him before he has to go to bed. And when is he ever going to know me, and to take him to daycare? And is he going to remember me at the end of the day? Cause he's so small. And I know I only did it for 2 weeks, and like working moms do it more. I know that, but like, I'm so blessed to have been able to spend all this time with him. There's days when it's hard to get things done because he went through a, I don't want a nap phase. And so, you know, I mean, he's a pretty content, good baby, but when you don't get anything done, then it's, what did I do for the whole month of April? I don't know.
Well, some of us without kids feel that way as well. I'm like, how could it possibly be July right now? Is it even right. July? No, it's not even July. It's June. I don't even know what month it is.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part of being a mom?
Oh gosh. Just having someone that, it's hard to describe, like just having someone that is like your whole heart, and just loving someone more than anyone you've ever loved in your whole life. And like, he just smiles at me all the time, and you just look in his eyes and think that I could look like Hot Mess Express, because, you know, I haven't showered for 2 days, and he just looks at me with so much love and smiles and happiness. Like, there's just nothing like it in the whole world.
What surprises you about being a mom?
That everything else doesn't matter. Like, things that I used to worry about so much don't even matter anymore at all. I used to be so busy doing things all the time. And people would say that was like, are you going to be able to stay at home? And are you going to be able to stop going out? And like, I don't even miss those things. And I know the way the world is right now, and we haven't been able to do things as much, but I'm okay. Like, I'm surprised how easy it was to like, just give up the life I had for this life, because it's perfect for me.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I see my friends like way more, I feel, because they like come over and we spend more time together versus like just meeting for a dinner quick and like, you know, have a nice night. Now they're like coming over and spending time with me and Bentley. So I feel like my friendships are like getting stronger. And so it's a cool thing.
That's great. So I wanted to ask you about your coaching business.
Yeah. So I got into coaching after Steve died, my husband. I was in a widows group, and I had been talking to the widows and getting to know some of these women, and they were just devastated, which is, you know, to be expected, right? But then they just felt like there was no purpose for their life anymore because their husband had died. And that just broke my heart, because I just think that everyone as an individual still has, if you're still here, there's a reason. And so you need to just be able to figure that out and live life. And I just was like, how can I help these women? And how can I help anyone that's struggling to like get back to where they want to go? Because I feel like deep down, everyone has something they want to accomplish in their life. And regardless of what happens, you can still get there. I decided to look into life coaching and grief coaching. So I got certified as a health coach, a life coach, and a grief coach, just to help people with the struggle. I think the biggest thing, the first year is really hard because everything is a first. And so when you have someone that's been through that and can understand how crazy it is to go back to work or to go grocery shopping for your first time, like those little things, it's been a blessing to be able to help people navigate that kind of stuff. And then my certification in grief is the grief to gratitude program. So it's really shifting the grief and turning it into gratitude and using it to better your life and still accomplish things that you want to accomplish. It's such a blessing, and I just want to help as many people.
Is your coaching focused on people who've lost a spouse, or is it grief over any loss?
It's grief over any loss, even, you know, divorce or a job, you know, loss comes in so many ways. I mean, my mom died in 2014, so I've been having to navigate all that stuff, like having a baby without your mom around. That's a hard thing. I just think any loss in general, I just really want to help people get through it and just be that person. I think, you know, accountability is important for if you're trying to reach your goals, as well as just having the support and having someone to talk through it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that some of the listeners to the podcast are women who have lost pregnancies. They're, you know, within our community, we have people who've had stillborns. Even the grief of going through fertility treatment for years and all of the money and all of the time and all of the heartache, you know, I think that that's its own kind of grief that's very present. And especially if you're a single woman going through, you may not have someone to talk to. So I think that those women might be really interested in working with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, how do people work with you? Is it one-on-one? Do you do groups? Do you do program?
I offer one-on-one coaching for grief and then general life coaching. If there's something you want to accomplish, we can work together for that. I do a grief group program, but on my website, it's set up like a few times during the year. So there's a wait list. If you go on my website, you can get on the wait list for the group program. But otherwise, one-on-one coaching is available at any time. On my website, there's a contact us or sign up for a consult call, and that's complimentary. And I just kind of sit down and talk to people and find out what they're looking for and how I can help them. And then if it's a fit, then we set something up.
Just logistically, how do you make that work as a single mom? Because I'm sure there are people listening going, I'd love to have a side hustle. I'd love to have a business, but like, how the heck do you make it happen?
Well, so it's been very interesting with, you know, not being at work, because I had everything lined up when I was going back to work. I had a high school student coming over at night, a couple nights a week to watch him so I could take calls. And now with COVID, I've kind of opened up my time. Since I don't have a full-time job, coaching has become my full-time job. I take him to the in-home daycare that I had just one or two days a week. So then I have time to do the coaching. Otherwise, he's pretty good with going to bed at night. So people that are available at night or early morning, we've made it work.
That's good. I think a lot of things, a lot of businesses, a lot of this podcast was born during COVID. I think I put out the first episode, went out March 18th, I want to say, somewhere around there, right around the time we started staying at home. I had already bought the microphone and I had downloaded the software and I had the idea. And as soon as we went into lockdown, I was like, okay, this is it. I have no excuse. Like, I've got to just do this.
Right.
So, and I'm pretty proud of myself. Like, I've kept it consistent. Every week, this week will be the 16th episode, and my goal is to get to 20. So the end is in sight, not the end, but just a break, you know, because it's a ton of work. I think if I had known how much work it was, I wouldn't have done it. So I'm glad I didn't know. But it's been really fun. I've gotten to talk to a lot of really great people. Well, is there anything else you want to make sure we talk about before we wrap up?
I just wanted to mention too, on my website, there's a PDF that I created, and it's called The 7 Ways to Stop Existing and Start Living. And it's kind of the 7 things I started doing after my husband died to kind of get things back in my life and get on track. They helped me through grieving and the healing process. So that's complimentary. Free download if you're interested. Just go to the website.
Will you tell us your website and also your Instagram handle?
My website is shellylincoaching.com, and it's Shelly, SHELLYNN coaching.com. And then my Instagram handle is shellylincoaching as well. And it's Shelly with an E.
Awesome. Yes. Well, I'm sure people will come and find you and learn more about your coaching and get to see pictures of your cute baby boy.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being willing to talk. I'm really excited to get this out there. And I hope that if you are somebody listening and you're dealing with grief of any kind, that you'll utilize this resource and reach out, and Shelly would be happy to talk with you. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.